Welcome to www.nylx.com radio. We're a little late, which is not unusual. We do everything a little bit late. We're our traditional 45 minutes late, in fact, which is only appropriate. Welcome, everybody out there who might be listening to us or listening to our archives. And I want to thank everybody for all the activities that they've done for NYLX this week. I have to tell you, this has been a historical week in the New York City free software community. NYLX has had the first election of any free software organization in the city of New York or in the metropolitan area, to the best of my knowledge. And I want to thank our very hardworking election committee who oversaw the election and made sure that we had a fair and clean election. I want to thank everybody who's voted, and also to tell everybody that I appreciate the fact that you all made the effort to get in your ballots. And before we start today, let me just give you, this will be the last show that I'm going to be doing as president of NYLX. By the way, this is Ruben Safer, and I'd just like to take a small trip down memory lane about how we've... how NYLX has been started and how it is that we've gotten to where we are and all the things that we've accomplished, so that anybody who's listening might choose or might decide to choose to join us. I have to tell you, first of all, anybody who's thinking about joining us, you really should do it as soon as possible. This is the organization and the place to be for the New York free software scene in the city of New York. We are involved in just about every aspect of free software that there is. Now, NYLXS was started a little over a year and a half ago, partly as a result of my efforts with New Yorkers and trying to establish New Yorkers for fair use, and partly as a result of disagreement that I was having with the leaders of various local Linux user groups on how to get things done and how to motivate people to do things. Most importantly, more important than either of those two things, our disagreement with the other organizations that had been in New York up to this point was the level of activity. I just simply wanted to do more. After September 11th, with NY Fair Use already into its door-to-door knocking for the DMCA on the Save the Libraries campaign, it became apparent that we needed that NY Fair Use was going to need a more solid background in terms of its ability to attract people and to fund itself. We were constantly running into money problems, we were constantly running into volunteer problems. In addition to that, after September 11th, when emotions were running artificially high, we had problems with some of the local area lugs, so I decided that I'd break off and create a new organization, which would not be a lug, but it would be a proactive organization that would experiment in a number of methods for organizing and for getting things done. And I was very happy to say at this point that nearly everything that we have attempted to do has been done. And that's pretty exciting. And the young man to my left of me right now, who I'll introduce in a minute, came in when we had our first professional in-service lecture over at the Corny Rose, done by a friend of mine by the name of Brian Seitz. His in-service is still online under the journal on IRC bots. And he showed up with a head full of steam and a little bit of fire in his belly about doing things and getting things done. He had been just gotten to New York at the time. And we had quite a bit of a conversation after the lecture about copyright of works and articles and various things. We won't get into the details of it. It's kind of useless at this point. But over time, his dedication to the organization has continued to grow. He has shown up to nearly every event. He's probably only second to me in event turnout. and he's probably only second to me in terms of identification with his organization. He is a graphics artist a fine art major by trade. He has a Red Hat certification in his pocket for whatever that's worth, which is an interesting conversation that we might make for a radio show one night. And he's responsible actually for this radio show being on the air weekly, as it is on the air. And
Bi-weekly.
We'll have to figure a way of doing it remotely. He's just been outstanding. I can't say enough good things about him at this particular junction. And he's been a board member of NYLXS for at least the last 7-8 months. I'd like to introduce our new president after the elections, Marco Scoffè. Say hello, Marco.
Hello.
There you go. So, let me... the original guest that was just ahead tonight was supposed to be Vinny, who was with us last week, and he's going to run some... We're going to run some articles past people. We've had a pretty busy week in terms of quite a few things that we've been doing. We'll get to those things. First, though... Well, let's first do the recap of the things that we've done this week. First of all, with the help of Dave Williams and myself, we have edited our report for the eGov OS action that we took in Washington D.C. with our NY Fair Use subcommittee. And we had a great time. Actually, that was a heck of a way to start a week. Last Sunday, we started the week by basically having a 16-hour install fest, and then we rambled down to Washington, D.C., and we went in there with dressed as colonial soldiers, and we had a huge thing. We had a huge problem with the eGov OS, which is not specifically with the eGov OS, but certainly... has a valid focus there in terms of how that went down. It was 2 weeks ago now at this point. And the issue with that, and you can read it on the NYLXS website, is, first of all, is that the people that were in charge of that, Tony Stanko in particular, decided that in order for them to have a free software advocacy meeting, they needed to have a nice, solid representation by Microsoft. And you know, we've had problems with that. That's been increasingly happening. And eGov OS was not the only person or the only organization that's had that problem. Microsoft has crept its way into a disinformation campaign all over the free software movement, and we've just been pulling out the chair for them. So this was our complaint. And we got a really nice article about that online, which should be coming, which I already have in HTML format. It should be on the link to the website this week. And we'll talk probably a little bit more about that later. In addition to that, we had our election, which meant that we don't have normal elections. Of course, we called an election on Monday night, and we had a nice turnout, maybe like 8 or 10 people of the 25 members of the organization or so, which is pretty normal for an organization-only meeting. The problem was we needed more. So now this was the U.S. government. They would be happy to simply have the election, and whoever shows up at the polls shows up at the polls. But being that this is not the U.S. government, and this is an organization that I run, I went over and I tracked down nearly every member that I can possibly put my hands on and shoved the ballot underneath their toes or underneath their face, turned my back on them, and said, vote. And they did. I had a lot of lunches with people and in order to do this, but we got... effectively now about 80%, maybe 70% of the voters, eligible voters for NYLX, got a chance to vote. So that's pretty good. Better than 30% that the government usually gets, right?
Forcing people to vote, that's a new idea.
That's a unique idea, right? It's not so much forcing them, but this is, the government actually, this is a big good thing. People actually knocked on your door at 9
really
o'clock at night.
You've got to do it.
Yeah. That was, you know, I've always been a proponent of making people vote anyway, but... We did pretty good. I'm glad to have 80% of the vote. By the way, that laughing hyena in the background happens to be a parrot. Yes. Yeah. Not only is he loud tonight, but for some reason the microphones pick up his voice much better than it picks up ours, but okay, because he's three rooms away from us. In any event, we did get 80% of the votes, and I got together with them, and we have election results, which were shown to me. However, I don't remember them off the top of my head. I will say, though, that I do remember that Marco was voted president, if I remember correctly. Marco Richardson was vice president. This is not official, so don't shoot me if I got this wrong. Unofficially, I believe that... I don't remember. I do remember that on the second treasurer, though, we had a three-way tie between Ray Conley, Vinny Likeshare, and Cecilo DeSavo. So they asked me what to do, so I just said, well, the heck with it, we'll just put them all on the board, and so we're going to keep it that way. In the case of Ray, he also won another position, which was recording secretary position, I believe. So as a result of that, it's really only one extra vote on the board, and which is actually less than what we have now. Somehow we've wound up with more members on the board than we expected. In any event, we did get everybody that we could to to vote, and the election committee will hopefully come out with an announcement, an official announcement, on the 31st of, or the 1st of April. What else did we do this week?
This week is kind of slow. I think everyone's been exhausted.
Well, that
it's... Well, we had the elections, but...
Well, it's only slow if you include writing an article, distributing the journal, holding the Linux or the Unix 2 class and the Perl 2 class in the single week as slow, I guess, then it's a little bit slow. Plus we have we had our weekly business networking meeting, which we're making some progress on. Now before we go any further, what I'd like to do is put Marco on the spot for a minute. I'd like to do is put you on the spot for a second and ask you, well, now that you appear to be the president-elect, one thing is pretty certain is that you were elected because that was a landslide. So what's your plans besides going to Disney World?
I'm going to Disney World. I have some big shoes to fill.
And you have some what?
Some big shoes to fill.
Oh, no, not really.
So hopefully there'll still be some action in the background to get things done.
Do you have any specific ideas on where you'd like to take the organization over the next, let's say, 3 months?
The next 3 months?
Planning more in 3 months, I find. At least for me, it had been more, not all that possible.
I would really like to get a little bit more stable funding through different grants and ways. I mean, there are organizations out to help groups like ours continue to be volunteer and... We'll pay for stuff like staff and rooms, and hopefully we can find a situation which would help take us to the next level of stability while we keep doing all the different things that we've been doing. So that's what I would specifically like to get done in the year, as I don't think it'll be done in the next 3 months. So we do have some applications coming up, including I've already put... there's an application for an individual grant, which would basically be getting us a salaried person, which I already spoke with Celso about. And
no, if you spoke to Celso about it, then it's done. Oh.
No, Celso, I think, will complete the application. I'll complete the application. Mm-hmm. You might want to complete the application. It's due on April 18th. And basically, it's a thing for... individuals in New York who are helping the society at large, pretty much, and they're looking for you to sell them a project. So we have a pretty good project to sell. And
which organization is that?
It's on the email. The thing is Open Society Initiative.
The Open Society Initiative.
Because I heard something like open source or open OSI, something like that. So. It's a New York-based thing which looks for sort of interesting volunteer projects that, you know, benefit society in different ways. But they actually fund an individual for a year, or it's like an 18-month project, they give you something like $48,000.
Do we need a specific...
There's a whole application you have to fill out.
Does it have to be one specific project? Because obviously we were involved with more than one project.
No, it has to. It's an individual, which is what's interesting. You don't even have to... The individual doesn't necessarily have to be affiliated with an organization, but I think it would be just more... a benefit to the application for it to be an individual saying, I want to do this to work with, you know, take NYLXS the next couple of steps down the road. And that's what I think it would be an interesting way of trying to get. I mean, we basically, you know, you are helping society. We are. I mean, that's one of the major.
Not according to Jay, but.
I mean, I think that a lot of people are interested to this group and the things we're trying to do because of this sort of. I mean, empowerment that free software can give to people and, you know, of all different kinds of...
Well, I think that, you know, we haven't really had... We haven't really ever suffered from a lack of interest. People have been interested in us and being involved. Where we suffer is that when we actually... come and then we put them to work, then they do a John Barber on us and they sort of...
Either they burn out and on one project because, I mean, some of the stuff that has to be done really does take a lot of effort and a lot of time and dedication and hours. And if you're not getting immediate feedback, any volunteer group is going to suffer from these types of...
layoff, yeah.
I mean, it's hard to get a volunteer group to finish huge projects. I mean, you can do it and you can stick to it and
actually,
push.
We have managed
to complete a lot of good things.
Big projects we've been good at. I think that sustaining small projects has been our...
Well, big projects like getting free software into the public schools, I mean, that's going to stay stalled until you... you really need to put a huge amount of effort behind that and push on many, many different fronts at the same time.
Simultaneously.
No one individual is going to suddenly get the wide door opening because he had that miraculous meeting with the right person. I mean, that really is going to take a dedicated effort by a lot of people and probably some financing and a little bit of structure and to push that one through as much as we want. I mean, as much as we can be for it and have a lot of people that understand and, oh, yes, this would be a better... It's much better to educate... high school kids about a little bit of programming and liberate them from the clutches of proprietary software. I mean, there's a couple more steps to take before that can be established, which we've touched on everything that would need to be done for this to happen. But, I mean,
we're trying to get them all moving together simultaneously is a problem. One of the problems that we have...
The teacher training has to be involved and, just sort of educating the entire... culture at large before you can...
One of the things that I tried to do and in this case membership drive is I think important is that I tried to broaden coming out of the NY Fair Use experience, I tried to broaden NYLX so that people could focus on things that they had an interest in and this way be able to use multiple talents of people in areas that they had an interest in and be able to in order to get multiple fronts moving all together in a uniform forward direction. Unfortunately, very often what we wind up with is the same, volunteers working on multiple projects at the same time, and that causes burnout. It's very hard, for example, to hold a protest against the city for not using free software on Monday, Tuesday meeting with the Board of Ed trying to sell them on free software on Tuesday, Wednesday working on a hardware recycling project to get computers into the schools on Wednesday, Thursday, meeting with local politicians to try to get them to push the issue with the city council, and then on Friday work with one of the universities or the larger institutions in New York to try to have a demonstration, a large demonstration for free software for the government, This is where, and each one of those projects can take easily 15 hours a week.
And should pretty much be, should probably be organized by different individuals who take this on as their little piece to the puzzle that they're going to move forward.
Right.
Where we can sort of hopefully be this guiding force to get the pieces of the puzzle working together as opposed to against each other, which, as we've noticed, often, unfortunately, ends up being the case with sort of
Getting people
bickering. You know, I mean, obviously,
we're actually pretty
good.
We haven't really bickered among ourselves too often.
Not so much in the organization, that's true.
But certainly, we've had events that have caused or individuals come to the organization with their own agenda, and that's, of course, is another problem. And I guess it's normal. It wasn't normal when I was working with real political organizations. Not like that this is not a real political organization, but when I was working for political organizations in the interest of trying to get people elected, I didn't have that problem. People came to the organization knowing that they were walking into an organization which had a hierarchy. Very often people walk into our organization with a zillion ideas, all of which they're ready to drive themselves, and very often these ideas are not well thought out in the direction that they're leading. It's sort of like IBM, I guess, except we don't have $100 billion, but in the case of IBM, nothing, or any large corporation, nothing moves fast. But once the organization moves, it moves together in mass with all of its different departments and areas, the research department, the marketing department, and so on, all collaboratively working on a project together, each in their own area, as a supervised by the board. This was hopefully the model for NYLXS also, that we would be able to do it so that the educational program would be not only something that's just somebody willy-nilly going around trying to put free software servers into high schools and getting the name on.
Yeah, or just showing NOPICs to a gazillion different
schools.
Oh,
right.
But
to actually integrate that into all the other aspects of what we're trying to do to create a cohesive front.
I mean, a lot of the committees right now are just getting off their feet. So when someone does come in and they say, well, what can I do? You say, well, everything, right?
Call me Monday morning.
Adds to the point that, I mean, yeah, then people do get their head, they will take things off in their own path and maybe run in a bunch of different directions or try to do everything at once, because if the committees are up and working a little bit more solidly, or as soon as they're up on their feet and more, I mean, all the committees are up on their feet in some respect, but as they grow and move forward, new people coming in will have a structure to come into, as opposed to what have you done so far? Nothing. We just thought this up.
Well, it would be unfair to say nothing,
nothing, but I mean, some of the plans are just at the very beginning of their implementation. So,
I think that one of the things that I would try to do if I was starting on a fresh sheet, and well, first of all, you have a whole year and a half of experience to look at now in terms of what NYLX has done up till now. But one of the things I think that one of the things that we need to think about, I think, as you have your first board meeting, is that when we sit down and we divvy up the committee handouts this time, we should try to write a roadmap or a mission statement for the committees. First, a total for the organization's goals, and then how each committee is to function within that structure for that total idea, and see if we can get the committees more focused in this regard, and get them to move forward. Needless to say that, being that I've walked around all this week giving out ballots, I've had a chance to talk closely to to nearly every member in the organization that's active at this point in the last week, which is why I kind of chuckled when you said, "Well, we haven't been busy this week." Well, yeah, we have. But anyway, there are a couple recurring themes that came over, and one is that Sonny Dubey, or Dubey, wherever he might be, he's probably on IRC right now somewhere, said something interesting. He's working with the Board of Education right now out of his position for Polytech, and he has quite a few internal insights to the bureaucracy of how the schools are functioning and so on. But one thing that was very clear to him, he says to me, well, even if you just get them hardware in there, you have to understand two things. First of all, the Board of Ed doesn't have anything called IT administrator. They don't have any... sorry. They don't have any such description, which I said I know. Well, actually, I knew everything he had already said, but it was nice to hear a 20-year-old kid, he's not even 20, I don't think, you know, make the same observations. But then he said, right now, for example, Board of Education has carte blanche on Microsoft products. In other words, they can basically use whatever they want without paying. And they have been given a site license either for money or for out money, which brought up the critical, and then which brings up the critical point, which is that, you know what? That means that, in other words, that no amount of money, you know, coming in for any sum of money is going to be enough to be able to drive Microsoft out of the marketplace because they're basically coming in below cost.
Free, yeah.
Right. So, clearly, under those circumstances, you need to have, it has to come from political pressure, sensible advocacy on a part of them in order to break in. And then once we break in, then we have to be able to supply the effort. The other thing is that the vendors that the schools use have to go through a whole process. Well, sort of. Yeah, they have to, you become a vendor to the public school system, you have to have so much capitalization, so on and so forth. A lot of things that we obviously don't have. Our best strategy is probably just drop machines in, so if we can get a recycling of machines in there, we can get a recycling program, and that would be good. But even if we get it in there, of course, then, as he points out, there's nobody there to take charge, so we're going to have to educate the Board of Education, obviously, in this regard.
I mean, I know that...
But you can see how this maps out into a multi-front attack involving a number of committees already. It involves the political committee, the educational committee, the PR committee, and the journal for publication, and then the FFCC in order to... Then the FFCC to give commercial level support to them and so on. And it's something that is similar to what you were saying.
It's a big battle, but I mean you can just continue it. When you're fighting, you saw the whole situation with the NYU Dental School and the Vital Books things that you are more or less famous for having quit. Because the entire school is putting the students' own
information DRM, DVDs,
in
right.
a DRM. It's just we can understand how heinous this seems. But when you think, somebody in the administration of NYU actually made this decision and didn't turn their stomach, And
no,
I know that talking
with
the Brooklyn Tech kids, the students of Brooklyn Tech who have been more or less active in our organization, that they have very similar...
You're talking about Brooklyn Tech or Polytech?
Polytech
is a college.
Probably Polytech.
Polytech's the college. Yeah, we had three kids from Polytech.
And I don't
want to name...
Sonny,
Jack, and... I forgot the third one's name off the top of my head.
Because they are... I mean, those students are put into extremely restrictive... they're forced to buy laptops. The laptops have to have this such and such a... As part of being a student, they are basically put in a similar DRM scheme with the laptops.
More, it's even better. Because they have to actually rent the laptop...
They lease the laptop, but then they don't have it, and then the software that's running on it, they don't get to keep either, and all sorts of stuff. So basically, everything they've been educated in, the same situation that I had coming out of art school. If you want to keep working with the stuff that basically you've spent, the last 4 years learning how to do, you're gonna have to invest so much money in the software that it's completely unfeasible. So. Every level of the education system has to be sort of educated in this and shown the possibilities and convinced that this is the more sustainable road to take and that your life can continue without Photoshop or whatever.
But it can actually be fulfilled and
be better.
Properly,
yeah,
yeah.
You're talking almost about. Competing against the whole of what seems to be current knowledge, what seems to be the common knowledge of multiple educational institutions. So, we can just state our case, state it as clear as we can, and continue moving and hope for a couple success stories that will broaden to more and stimulate other people to work in the same way. And
how many community boards do you think that we would be able to hit at this point? Because we would be able to do even better at this if we can start to galvanize the local population. And we can, most community boards, when they have a meeting, they have time where somebody can sign up and speak to the community board if you're a member of that community. And we probably, we're spread out pretty good around the city at this point. We probably have, we have 25 members, and they're probably spread out into approximately maybe 20 different community boards. There's about 40 of them in the city. Which one are you in, do you know?
I must be Crown Heights or whatever name my neighborhood tends to have at this moment.
Where is it exactly?
Huh?
You're probably in Jefferson, but...
Well, it's... Some people call it... I don't know. It doesn't matter. Between Clinton Hill and Fort Greene and Crown Heights and Bedford-Stuyvesant. One of those four.
That describes Bedford-Stuyvesant. Bedford-Stuyvesant's neighborhood that's between Crown Heights and Fort Greene. But... Some neighborhoods get known as being no man lands, and they grow accordingly to that. So, like, East New York at one time was only about 40 blocks wide, and then as the neighborhood got bad, then everybody said it was East New York, and then as it continued to spread the urban blight, you know, that neighborhood just got larger and larger. Now you say East New York, and it means everything from East Flatbush to Queens. But,
I don't know much about the local politics. I think that would be a good... way of moving forward.
Yeah, it might be a good idea for us to just dedicate a month to making all those meetings, you know, the whole group, you know, because these meetings are very often not heavily attended, but the community board does have significant impact on the local decision-making board and does have some influence, although marginally, at the Board of Ed. But what's more important about their influence there is their informal influence, because these are the same...
Which is probably, it's probably more important to get that first, because... You need to get on the radar. I mean, we do still need to get on the radar somewhat.
Right, completely. So that's something we might look at. I didn't want to start any large projects before, before you had a chance to take the reins. There was, in terms of funding, that was another thing that a lot of people talked to me about. Dave Williams, who's technically not a member yet. We'll have to see if
hopefully
he actually becomes
my
answer.
Well,
hopefully. We'll see. It's up to Dave. I can't. I'm not going to make him. But getting a steady source of income is really critical. I don't know if by itself grant writing or grants are going to do it for us. But obviously the FSCC can wind up being a good source of income if we can get that finally rolling off the ground, where 10% of all the money that's coming through the consulting network is spent. Don't worry about that. 20 is spent on, is given kickback to NYLXS. We're in desperate need of a salesperson. If you're a salesperson, we need you. We need somebody to sell.
The whole free stuff from
Yeah. I'm not talking about an advocate. I need a deadpan salesperson to lie through your teeth to sell our product over somebody else's. But that could be one source.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that the vast majority of free software people are too honest to sell through their teeth.
Or just too argumentative, or various other things. You tell the story better than I do. What happened at the expo when we were announcing that we were having the dinner with Richard Stallman and Don Marty, and somebody came over and says, "Richard, know that you're charging money, or you're trying to make money off of this."
Yes, free software people do need to make money.
I was also thinking. I was also thinking in terms of, we were talking about professionalizing the journal.
Which is a good idea. Making the columns a little wider would be a good idea also.
Yeah. One of the good things about David Williams, if he does decide to stick around New York or join, is that he's an excellent writer. He's probably the best writer I've seen in a long time. He's far better writer than me, and which is not an easy thing for me to admit because I spend a lot of time writing, but he's a better writer than me. Actually, it's very interesting talking to him because I was listening to the radio show that we did with Dave, and I was busy doing the show, and I'm used to having people that are not as comprehensive in their thinking process as I am. So I was kind of interjecting into him, and I wasn't really listening closely when we were doing the show. And then I went back and I listened to the radio show, and I realized that he had basically covered nearly all of the, you know, the points that that I had made or been trying to make, and he picked up on most of these aspects rather quickly. And his writing reflects this also. He's definitely has an art for communication without the talent. It's just a raw talent. I'm hoping that we can get him to take over the journal, and because Michael says he doesn't want to do the journal anymore. I can't understand that. But he says he doesn't want to do the journal anymore, and we can get him to take over the journal. But more importantly, Tim Wilcox's friend Laura...
Help with the publish.
Yeah, publishing. I forgot her name because it's a very long Polish name. But she launched Linux Magazine. Hmm. Now, the Linux Journal is out in California, and they have a certain aspect on things. And I think that it might be possible to actually launch something compatible on the East Coast. In New York, I think that somebody like David Williams clearly has got the ability to put something like that together. But going further than that...
Did you hear about Celso's contacts with the Linux format?
Yeah, they emailed me that we were going to be their log of the month. Yeah. Oh, their distributor? No, he didn't tell me
well,
that.
Well, not a distributor, but that people could get, because right now it's very expensive to get. I haven't subscribed or bought a Linux format, I think, but...
Why don't subscribe to any of the magazines anymore?
It's supposedly
anymore,
very expensive, and that we could become a sort of subscription point, but that also Celso was thinking inserting, or at least making that, you know, the ones that come through us, we could piggyback our publication to as a starting...
That might be one way of doing it. I don't want to wind up being in a situation like with the Pearl Journal where it never really gets off the damn ground.
Yeah, it's always this sort of...
Yeah. But expanding on the idea, you know, in terms of fundraising and so on, I don't see any reason why we can't have an NYLXS press. I mean, they have the New England Journal of Medicine, and why can't we have the New York Journal of Free Software? Right? In fact, maybe we can even rename the journal to the New York Journal of Free Software and get it published. And not just that published, but also...
We have the drive to get it. I mean, we already have a very good set of articles, I think. I mean, it could...
Oh, we have probably...
We just need the sort of editing and the, you know...
At this point, compared to any other free software group probably in the world, we have probably the largest sum of resources. It's kind of buried under the resource buttons, and I looked at it last night and decided I have to
The membership page has to be redone. Yes.
Well, the membership pages have to be redone, but even more importantly, the resources pages, I think, have to be done. The way I had the server set up, it tells me what the last page is that somebody comes to in the error logs. And when I scan it, I can see when they come from Google or when they come from Yahoo what the searches were in order to find the pages. So I have an idea of what people are searching for. Of course, the page that gets the most hits is after...
Is the IRC bots?
That's number two now. Well, after the first page is number one. Number two is now Brian. Number one is Liz's page. I don't understand it. She's got this nothing page that just is getting more and more hits all the time. I just don't understand it.
What's the page?
It's nolx.com/Liz, and Liz Arum's page just, I don't know what she put up there that's so interesting. I look at it, I don't understand it. There's some flash thing in there that I don't use. It doesn't even work in Mozilla correctly. It only works in Internet Explorer, but somehow it's become extremely popular, especially at night from Europe for some reason. Almost all her hits are coming from overseas. It's very interesting. But it's weird. In any event... after that, though, is the IRC bot articles, and then in addition to that is the number of articles that are in the journal. But
I mean, I do think the technical content. I mean, that's you worked it about, right? I mean, a lot of people think that that'll be the driving hit gatherer for websites, to have the technical content, and then people will visit out from there.
I'd like to publish books. I mean, it's possible that it's possible that I don't see why we can't publish books altogether. There is you know, more than enough talent around the New York City area, and more than enough unemployed people that have astonishing levels of talent, that I think that we should be able to, you know, even publish books. I mean, why give O'Reilly all the business? You know, what has O'Reilly done for free software? Which sounds ridiculous to most people's ears, but I mean it genuinely.
Did you have the definitive books on, you know, .NET and stuff like that too? So not just a free software house.
That's true. That's also true. They are a programming house in general, and their books are of high quality. But I think that there's room for us to have published other stuff. I mean, I don't know exactly where I would start. I certainly wouldn't try to write another Perl book. But David Sugar's Bayonne project can use a book. I'm sure that Tim Wilcox could write, if he chose to, or ghostwrite a Beowulf clustering.
Experiences in the Beowulf field,
right,
or something. Not just the technical setup.
Right. And there are other things that I think that we might be able to publish. And of course, if we can, we can possibly grow that as it goes along. What am I looking for here? I forgot. Oh, Liz. That's right, Liz. In addition to that, there are things that we haven't looked at yet. Also, I mean, that's in addition to that, there's other things that we could be hitting on that we haven't really looked at. How is there a decent book at this point on audio video?
Video is not up to a book yet.
You don't think video is up to a book yet? There's also
there's the No Starch series on audio, which is very good.
We could also create a book that's just an index of free software books, similar to what's called Index Medicus and Medicine, which is an index. What it is an index of all of the first. This would take a decent librarian, which has been a problem to get, but it's an index of
the
all
journals too would be important.
Right, the journals and the free software books and so on, so that it make it easy to find the material by subject. And what this allows people to do, this is critical for libraries, because when you go to a library with a large degree of material and you want to try to find information, of course you can always Google it, but that's not always possible. It's better to have a trade or something that's specific in the trade that actually indexes everything. And so this is something else that we might look at doing. So this is possible another revenue source that we can look at doing.
Seems like a rather narrow.
It seems like a narrow shot, right?
I don't know enough about it.
Well, with medicine, Index Medicus is huge. I mean, of course, it's been going back since the 1840s, and it indexes everything that's ever been discovered, essentially, because every discovery has to wind up in a scientific trade magazine. I'm not marrying it to it, but it's an idea. The other thing is, in terms of making money, another thing that has been thought of has been Another thing that that we've been looking at, or possibly that we can look at, is the possibility of having a hardware recycling. They have a hardware recycling program. If we can get hardware in and then sell it off.
Yeah.
Or just even to charge for the cleaning of disks, right? Because if you get like 1,000 books from or 1,000 disks from Citibank, if we write a small C program that wipes the drive clean, then you know they have to get rid of those machines. They don't want to throw them out because they can't do that anyway until they remove the data from their hard drives. So this is a big problem for them. So what they want to do is wipe the drives clean, and then they might as well give them away. So we could be, you know, get involved possibly in the hardware recycling business, and then we could sell it secondhand, used hardware, or donate part of it to the school system or whatever, and that can yet be another funding resource.
That can be the resource for extremely cheap, fully functional Linux boxes.
Yeah, I mean, if we get 500 machines, let's say, right, from a donation, and we wipe them all clean, and even if we sell them at $50 a piece,
yeah,
with monitors, that's a good deal for everybody involved, right?
So next step is getting the copper pairs connecting a whole network of people throughout New York that will DSL themselves together.
DSL themselves together?
You can run your home DSL with just a copper pair. I mean, assuming that one person has the, you know, the T1 or a big enough trunk, and then with copper pairing out.
I've never done it, but you know, it's beyond my current scope. You want to do that? Well, I had some discussions with Mr. Wynkoop about that at one point when NYX originally went down, and I just wanted to get off the phone system altogether, and it's not simple. Just getting a copper pair, it's just very, it's just not simple. There's a private company that's in charge of the city streets that has a contract until the year 3158, you know.
You can't just ask for a copper pair for between two business. I mean, this is how I read that other people had done it in different parts of the country.
Not in New York City.
Okay.
And it's part of the phone monopoly. They got to tie it down. The only way that you can possibly do it in New York City is to use the public access channel and go radio to radio. So, but this has been done, by the way. People who've done things like that previously are people like Hatzala around here, which is Hebrew for help, and they are the volunteer ambulance corps, and they go around and they ask congressmen or local officials to intercede with them with Brooklyn College or the Philip Housett housing over here, which is that tall structure on Flatbush Avenue that can oversee most of the neighborhood, to put up an antenna for their radios. Mm. Well, this is the same thing. You know, we just need to get up on... First of all, you need to get somebody who knows something about radio, which itself, I think I'd rather pay somebody to do, if there are experienced volunteers on that behalf. But then, yeah, we can literally hook up a good section of Brooklyn, at least, to it. In Manhattan, it's a bigger issue, because the tallest buildings that used to be there are not there anymore, and the other taller buildings don't have enough access space. I mean, you look at the Chrysler Building now, you look at it now, and you just see antennas all over the top of it. You know, it's just like, looks like...
there's been how much your antenna hookup would cost.
It looks like a spider web up there, you know. It's just the whole smoothness of the break of the building is gone at this point. There's just really hundreds of antennas on that thing for all kinds of cell phone usage and so on. Anyway, that was some of the things that we had... brainstormed on this, and of course we can pick this up, or you can pick this up at the first board meeting. By the way, when do you want to have the first board meeting?
Next Monday? Monday, right?
Next Monday would be
April 7th, maybe.
Okay.
Oh no, 6th.
Next Monday would be the 31st, right?
That's the 31st. Oh,
okay,
is
the next
tomorrow.
Yeah, it's tomorrow, right? Is that the NY Fair Use meetings tomorrow? Okay. It's also tried to call a meeting for tonight. Was that it? Or did I miss my own NY Fair Use meeting? No, I couldn't have done that. At least I don't think I would have done that. In any event, I never miss my own meetings, right? We're looking at April 7th. The 14th, you can have a meeting, but I won't be in town. I'm going to be out for a week at that particular junction.
Well, the 14th it is, then.
And New York celebrates. There you go. Have a coup. Talk about having a bloodless coup. There you go. Let's see. On the 30th, we have the TCPIP workshop. The 31st is tomorrow, the NY Fair Use meeting. On the 1st is the Unix 2 class. I called took the honor of calling a general membership meeting on that day over at Rosenzweig and Mafia so that we can have the swearing in new officers, drink a lot of scotch, and show the Unix 2 people what NY Linux is about, drinking scotch and hacking all at the same time. And after that, I left everything on the schedule is pretty much open except for the workshop and the FSC meetings, which is not even on here.
I think I may try to double book a little bit less in my year of...
Well, you're welcome to try it. Believe me, I tried that.
Put that in the official speech.
Yeah. I tried that. Well, you have to figure if you got, you know, like 9 subcommittees, they're gonna, and plus the classes running, that you're gonna wind up with double booking. No way, two ways about it. I think that also we're gonna have to look at the FSCC, you know, or not the FSCC, the FSI, the Free Software Institute, and see if we can market that more collectively as a single program, if possible, and try to get people to move into the advanced classes, right? Also, just for your own sake, we have about $4,000 worth of cash left in the bank, which is sizably more than I thought. I tried to spend every bit of it before the last week.
You still got a day.
Just didn't work, right? We also have some dedicated funds that have been set aside by volunteer or by people who have donated money for defense of the NY Fair Use brand and the NYLX.org. Trademark violation problem, which in itself has had an interesting week. You should know, just for the sake of knowing it, that if you look up the DNS server now for Win.com, which is the Brett Winkus server, he now has in the in that record, he has the now magic domain called ComputerLitigator.com. So I assume that he's developed some kind of relationship with an unknown person out in Suffolk County. You know, so we're going to see some action on that, I think, at some point. I've been collecting, by the way, also as much of the original data as I can. I've had to rip hard drives out of old machines in order to try to find original web pages I had designed and so on and so forth, which we'll be able to bring into court for evidence on that.
Should be in for some more action.
Well, it's burned out as many people, I think, as it can possibly burn out. Let's see, what else? Yeah, I've already looked it up. There's nothing there. It's just, there's literally nothing there. There's nothing to look up as far as who they are. It's an empty directory. That's interesting, though. You see that flash that comes up for ComputerLitigator.com is that HTTP... it's not really a redirect. It's that program. It's the same program that was being used... HTTrack? That's the same program that Mr. Winkoop was using to mirror our web server with before I finally put an end to that by putting a little module in Apache that said anytime it sees that and 3 or 4 other different types of mirroring agents, that it just gives them a message that's something like Brett Winkoop is a cybersquatter.com or something like that. You know, little games you can play if you have enough background. How about Social gatherings. You have any plans for social gatherings?
I think a barbecue would be good. Summer barbecue.
That would be coming up soon.
Well, the summer's... It's snowing today, but the summer shouldn't be not too far away.
Where would you like to do that? In the city or go to, like, Bear Mountain? Maybe?
Probably in the city so people, you know, get the most people to come out as possible.
Well, if we do it in the city, it's kind of hard to...
Barbecue's at Prospect Park and stuff, isn't it?
I don't... Well... I've
seen barbecue.
Yeah, I don't know if we want a barbecue at Prospect Park. I mean... If you want a barbecue at Prospect Park, you don't want to do it on a... You don't want to do it on a weekend. Because...
All right, well,
the park is completely... I mean, have you ever been to Prospect Park on the weekend? It's
pretty packed.
Yeah, it's overrun at summer. I mean, Monday morning, you walk through Prospect Park, and it's literally... The park is trashed.
Chicken bones
all over the place. Yes, it's just completely trashed. And it takes them about 2 days to finally pick it up. They have what they call a drum row down there on the southwest part of the park. If you've never been there, on Ocean Avenue and Parkside Avenue, and on that on that intersection, they play the drums from like 4 o'clock in the morning till about four o'clock in the morning, Saturday and Sunday, and Friday, maybe Friday night also. And so that area, when you go there, it's just completely dirt. I mean, they've tried growing grass there; it just gets too trampled for that. But the picnic, during the weekday, it's another story. But the picnic grounds,
how about
you know,
on the park that's along the Atlantic, when you know, that kind of wraps around. I biked along it from Coney. If you bike from Coney Island over to Bay Ridge, there's a bike path and a park. It's kind of a skinny thing.
There's a couple of them. There is one that is along the shorefront in the Bay Ridge area, next to the belt.
Yeah.
That's one. There is another one going out towards Canarsie, which is actually nicer. I'm sorry. At the Canarsie Pier, which is nicer. And of course, I think that though if we choose to do it in the city, we might be better off going to Reese Park, which is a place we probably haven't been to yet, but it's the big beach in Far Rockaway. It's not that really that far away. There's a bridge that goes from near King's Plaza to over Jamaica Bay to Far Rockaway. And there they have a real beach. It's sort of like Coney Island, except it's much more massive. And and so on. But that would be interesting. Okay. Now, that being said, let me just cover... sounds like an interesting year. So... that we have in front of us. That being said...
We didn't... there is a political committee, right?
Yes.
Okay, we have to put that... Because that was... we need to elect the leaders of the political committee.
We can do that.
I nominate Ruben.
Nominate Ruben?
I'll nominate him at the first board meeting also.
Well, that's got to be discussed at that board meeting. Either we can do that at the general membership meeting, or we can just do it at...
Well, we have to have... I mean, at the first meeting, we have to reestablish all the committees, right?
Right.
So, at the first board meeting.
We also have a bunch of website pages that eventually need to get rid of.
Yeah.
We have, going back from last summer, we have the boat trip, where I have this adorable pictures of Billy and his kid. We have... In addition to the boat trip, we have the eGov OS adventure. We have the OS install fest pictures. We have. Do we have anything from the last Linux World Expo? I don't remember anymore. Even what we've done. I mean,
there's sort of historical ones you can get done, but this also be fun.
It would be really nice for people to be able to, not that they can't already, but when they go to that events page, currently we have a few things in there, right? We have, I did get the annual dinner up, but we have, the Brooklyn Install Fest, Free Dimitri Protest, Fair Use Actions, Linux Expo 2001, Linux Expo 2002, NYLXX Install Feast, Washington Political Action, CUNY Business Demo, CUNY Business Demo at LaGuardia, Queens.
That's the other thing. We need to get the make sure that Catherine and Gibbs Expo is.
We're not getting a live feed from there. Bruce Inglis is our contact for that, and we're gonna have to actually plow through him. But I'm getting a little frustrated with that, and I think that maybe we should look at possibly different venues. We have 3 students at Polytech, right? As you pointed out, so maybe we could do something with Polytech. In fact, that would be right in Metro Tech, which is probably the city's largest computing center, and that would be really. That would be really kind of cool if we can do it there. I've always wanted to do something in Borough Hall. It would be nice too.
In Borough Hall?
Yeah, in Borough Hall, right? Like in Borough Hall. I want to have a dinner in the Borough Hall. You know, maybe we can try to exploit those contacts that didn't pan out for the Brooklyn stuff. And we have we also have the Department of Commerce workshop report. So we have a number of other things that were done and write ups that need to be. Done with that, and of course the journals need to catch up also. We don't have the HTML. We've been threatened with the HTML versions of those for a while. I don't know, it sounds pretty boring to me. Not enough to do. How about audio video stuff? Any plans for that?
I was going to suggest taking a hard drive home today.
Okay, if there's anywhere you can find one, you're welcome to it.
Because I got some scripts working for another project to get the. I think it can be done quicker.
How about a telephone patch cord for this out of here?
I can get one of those too. I found the equipment to do it. But we still only have one line coming in. But as far as getting the audio from the phone into the mixer, I think it costs $60. It's just a little cube. We could make one cheaper, but I think we should just.
Is there a problem with only having one line? Does it mean we can't have two-way communication?
We would have to... With one line, that just means you can only have one person...
calling at a time.
Calling at a time, but you'll get both halves of the conversation on the show.
That would be great, even if we can get one line going. I mean, I think the Linux show itself only has a couple of...
And with one line, it would mean that, you know, while one person is talking, obviously you can't gather the next calls to come on the show, but, I mean, it would be a start.
Well, one of the successes of the Linux show and why it moves the way it does is because of...
I do think that the calling in would add a huge dimension to the radio show, that's for sure.
Right. And, you know, maybe also, once we have that up there, we can start going after some of the larger... we can start looking at some of the larger segments or, you know, industrial people in the city in order to have them talk, and we can try to stretch, the guest list. So that's, that's another thing. Also... Some things just wanted to break my concentration, but David Williams says the great thing that he does is administer nonprofits. Okay, it might very well be that he's good at administering nonprofits. I have no doubt, but what we also need to get done is this little internet cafe over here.
Mm-hmm. With the classes in the back. That should definitely be
right. Now, what we want to do is actually open up a real school. And in order to do that, we need to... look at a whole slew of forms from New York State on opening up, a for-profit... school system or schooling. Now, obviously, if every immigrant group in New York has been able to do this, we should have some.
I think the vast majority of them are
Chinese or Russian. Huh? Illicit? I don't think they're illicit because a lot of them, like this one down the block over here on Kings Highway, is takes money. They have a sign up there: take classes for free if you're unemployed.
you know, and they actually do the paperwork and so on for them. So I don't know how successful they are. This is obviously a very hard IT market right now. But I can't do any of that until we get that paperwork done. Now, they have virtually, just on our, you know, my friendliness with their with them, have willing to build us a school downstairs. Because they're going to have two floors. They'll have the upstairs and the downstairs where they'll throw parties and so on and so forth. And we can use the downstairs for, with four computers, we can put, you know, a half dozen or a dozen machines down there and use that for teaching. And it should be a good thing if we can, you know, we'll make some split on the profits on that. But we need to get the schooling out. Also, I feel a little bit like FDR handing over to Harry Truman, you know. By the way, Harry, there's this thing called the atomic bomb that we have. You have to make a decision on this, and you have 48 hours. but we also have, in terms of, we've been asked to collaborate with the Linux Society. You know about their educational program?
Not too much.
The Linux Society has been having for years now, you know, like LPI, but Red Hat certification classes going on every night I can go. It's always on Friday evenings, you know, like every other week or so, whatever it is, for studying for the LPI. Now, they've had some problems, but they've spoken to us, or I was contacted at the last NILOG meeting with Mr. Stephanopoulos over there. And they would like to go with us possibly 50-50 on classes. Now, one of the advantages of doing that for us would be is that they're on 32nd Street and 8th Avenue.
Are they at that New York PC, that PC club space?
That's right.
In the something or other hotel?
Yeah, in the New Yorker Hotel, right? So it's right near Madison Square Garden. Mm. So you're going to have to follow up with him on that. I think that we should probably leave Paul Rodriguez in charge of the FSIA at this junction. He's done a really good job with it so far. Or we can just absorb the Linux Society, which was at one point actually offered to me. When I first started NYLXS and the Linux Society was really having problems, from two or three different informal locations, people had asked me if I wanted to take over the Linux Society. And I said, and what, make it a part of NYLXS? And they said, well, yeah. And I said, well, I'd be willing to do that, but we have our own charter and that I'm aiming for and our own agenda. And they said, well, when it came down to it, they're just embedded into that organization, whatever it is, NYPC, whatever, and we're not going to unembed them. But they've had a number of problems in terms of leadership problems, and but they do have a following, you know, not a small one. You know, maybe like, I mean, their following is almost as large as ours. Obviously, they don't do everything that we do, but they have like 18 or 20 people there. If we might think of, doing that. And Mr. Vincenzo, like in Share, one word like in Share, is suggesting that we need to solicit laptop donations for classes. So they don't have much at Linux Society. So they don't have much at the Linux Society when I was there, blah, 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 blah. They list a lot of classes on the schedule, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I know all the problems at the Linux Society, but we're not going to badmouth them. Over the years, the Linux Society is probably the oldest of all the organizations, and they've done not a bad job, and they are integrated into just another organization. So it's just got to be, it has to be understood from that from that perspective. They operate under a charter of their own, but not of their making, actually. So that's another thing that's on the plate. So what's happening with our chances of getting on primetime television?
Those should be moving forward in Celso time. Which I have confidence in.
Any day now. It's like the Dunkin' Donuts commercial. You know, actually, it looks like he's making progress with the Board of Education stuff.
He made a good... he has a meeting for us in 5 weeks, which has to be prepared, and he I think, is using the web forums to schedule a meeting for people who would be interested in participating in the presentation to the Board of Education of Free Software, which we have the meeting with the right person in, I think it's the end of April, which we'd scheduled purposely to have time to prepare for it. And he's gone to his own community board and did an optics demonstration for them, and through that got a possibility of installing Linux computers at the big church in his neighborhood, and I don't know what else. But
there's a lot of possibilities.
Being very active, and you know, I think he's got a good attitude on.
Oh, he's got a great attitude.
Getting on people's radar.
We make fun. I make fun of Cecil because he has a problem of obviously following through things or coordinating with other people. But his attitude is
right on,
is
yeah.
great, and he's nobody can ever accuse him of being lazy. I think that he'll I'm hoping that he's going to become a little bit more reliable and stable after his wife has the baby. But he called me, you know, in the middle of a class or something, or here, and said, I hear all this background noise. This is a typical Cecil thing. There's that guy calls me on the cell phone. Of course, he once called me on the cell phone when he was in the bathroom, also on the toilet. But I have spoken to him in every position possible, except probably in the shower. But he calls me, and there's all this background noise. Sounds like a bingo parlor, you know. So he says, Ruben, I said, you know, Cecil, I have five people waiting here for a class. He says, but I need to talk to you for a second. I did exactly what you said, and I seeked out my local community, council member, and he had this town meeting, and I'm at the town meeting now, and I'm scheduled to speak. What should I do? What should I say?
And then he called me after I got from you.
Yeah. To which I said, I forgot what I said to him, because this was... I don't think he realizes what kind of bolt of lightning that is, you know, or maybe he believes that I have these preordained speeches in front of me all the time. But
having a bit of a kit and a presentation, and I mean, this would be something we've always talked about.
Yeah, like the free software. Well, we wanted to have the desktop demonstration program, among other things, that we wanted to do. I mean, clearly, I would hope that over the next year, that as you move forward with it, that one of the things that we can do is try to become a little bit more organized. I mean, I tried to map out the structure of it as best as I could. And if I was going to continue with another year, then I would be focusing on the money aspect and the organizational aspect.
I think as soon as this stuff is getting off the ground and we are getting more structure, there is stuff that people don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. You know, we already have a sort of marketing kit to build off of and stuff like that, and making that obviously accessible. I mean, it's just minor organizational things that would make it easier for people coming in, or, you know, Celso's in his position, he's about to go give a spiel. Isn't there a spiel somewhere that's already sort of done that I can work off of? That would probably be a good thing to have at everybody's.
We did part of that when we got the folders, which we have over 300
exactly.
of them still here. I thought we didn't have enough folders when we ordered them. It wound up being 500 folders, wound up being
enough. I mean,
yeah.
a start.
I think that coming.
But getting all of these kits together and ready to go and kind
another
of
thing.
Kept to date and
yeah,
accessible, and you don't have to search through an entire server every time you're looking for the.
Ripping through my mail, which is what I do sometimes to try to find phone numbers. You know, I had at one point like 300 telephone numbers in my GNOME address book, and then I accidentally blew it away. To which Billy said, "Well, that's what erased was my backups." Thank you, Billy. You just don't say a $100 DAT drive, and I'll be happy to make backups every night. But the thing is that now we have two machines. It might be worth backing up some of the data onto the other machine. At least, but I'm gonna ask to take over the membership committee itself as secretary, which is basically supposed to be in charge of correspondence anyway. And I want to create a specific membership packet so that when people do sign up, that first of all they get something in their hands, a membership packet out of the folders.
At least a mission statement and stuff like that.
Yes.
I mean, more than...
And a rundown of committees and a form, perhaps, people what committees they would like to volunteer from, how many hours they can possibly commit to things, and then we can process that back out to the, you know, to the chairman of the boards and the committee.
That should probably be reflected in. I mean, we were talking about that membership, the membership and committees and organization part of the website, which is still. There's a bullet on the top headers of the website.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Membership, but under that part, it should definitely have what you know, showing the structures of the committee. Each committee has its own web page and what it's doing right now, and
that whole bit
of organization should definitely need.
We got only. That's clearly inadequate. What's up there right now, and I apologize for that.
No, I know. I mean, I was working on it a couple months ago, and I didn't finish it either.
The
members corner, I guess it's called.
Not only is there a members corner, which we have,
but
two,
this should have
that
the
we have
full
two
committees blown
we have,
out.
Yeah,
and then,
we have
yeah.
two different versions of this in the first place.
Yeah,
which is one problem because here you don't like. Here's the committees, and these are the committees.
Mm-mm.
That are under the committee sections, but there's not much discussion about them, nor is there any schedule for them.
You don't get a full view of the...
Yeah, it's just never... The background was made, and then it's just become so much to upgrade. We have to somehow automate this. Also, when this was designed by whoever designed it, there's this little login and registration button that we should probably try to activate so that people can...
Committee heads and things.
Yeah, not only that, but people can join... online. I mean, mm-hmm. sure, we'll take the $40 and they'll show up for a meeting. But, you know, we should have a little PayPal button in there where they can register and join online, which is not really much different from the classroom stuff. And then that would be helpful also probably to do that. I don't know, at some point, you know, when this was prepared, the person that did it was still in the .com mode, and she thought that there was going to be some large valuable thing that we were going to be able to create just from having, you know, a logged in community, you know, that you can get into, right? I don't think the time she would fully realize just how dead the .com initiative had been. But there are some services, though, that I think that we can provide. I'd like to try to provide webmail for people through the PHP Google server, which is behind the firewall and set up.
The number of people that... Surprising that in a...
Yeah, it's interesting.
Such a technically evolved group, we'd still have...
You still have people using Yahoo browser. Mail, I know. You don't know how much of the mailing list I manually pushed through the list because people just... besides people like Richard Stallman, who I just wouldn't sign up to the list even though he regularly posts to it.
Why wouldn't you sign him up to the list?
Well, why would I not? I don't know. I forward half the mail to him anyway at this point. But the thing is that... Yeah, I wouldn't just sign Richard for this. But I would... I had thought about putting the modem up. At one point, there was a second phone line in here.
Oh, the call-in?
Yeah, thing? But it's only like $25 a month or so for the other... Not only for the call-in, but also for... dial-up service, you know, free. We can give members free dial-up service, perhaps. But even if I do that, there's only one line here, and there's only one modem. And as soon as somebody starts taking it seriously and they stay online for 6 to 8 hours, then that's the end of it for everybody else anyway.
We're good looking. My building's set up to have, professional business phone hookups, and I know I have, like, 20 lines in the hall I could... just tap into if I felt illegal about it, but
The thing is,
I think when you buy 8
things.
Or 10 lines, you do get packs on them. Or
how much do you think they would go for?
We could figure it out and see how many people would want this sort of dial-in service. And I know that here you'd probably have to ask for Verizon to come and pull the wires from the pole to your house, and that would be an install. Setup.
I'm so afraid.
I know that my building's already my building's ready to go. But
I'm frankly so afraid of having Verizon touch the phone lines at all.
I understand.
Not the DSL.
I told you that I went and did it myself because Verizon didn't.
Yeah. Well, I had to actually newly bribe COVID to do it for me, you know. So, anyway, that's pretty good summary of things. But I just want to go over the latest things for the eGov events. Let's see if Vincenzo sent us the links. for that, for stuff. Actually, there's a couple, there's two things that I'd like to talk about. Okay, we're still on, the ego of Tony Stanko fiasco. Let's just talk about some of the things that have happened about that this week. Rob Limo, who is one of the writers, not one of my favorite ones, by the way, but one of the writers on NewsForge, did an article on eGovOS, and he was kind enough to actually mention us in a relatively unflattering way, but he did mention us. And he did say, first, he said we weren't, he also mentioned the fact that he got a letter that we were not NY Fair Use, which we are. But we did, this really perturbed to probably David Williams more than me, or Wilson Williams, I'm sorry, David Williams more than even I did. But we hammered on, we had a number of people hammering, hopefully constructively, on that. There is one gentleman, though, also did another eGov OS message, and it's very interesting. The guy's name is David Sklar. David Sklar is located somewhere in the city of New York, as a matter of fact. And what he did was he writes for the O'Reilly network, and what he did was he wrote an article about the eGov OS there. Let me see if I can find it. And what's interesting about David Sklar is the following. David Sklar, first of all, is located in New York. And not only is he located in New York, but there's a picture of him on the O'Reilly site. If you look, put his name in there, his name is S-K-L-A-R. He looks like he's a very mature man of maybe 20. At one point, when Seth Johnson and Brett Wincoop were still involved with NY Fair Use in a constructive fashion, before they tried to steal it, they very much recommended that I bring David into this. But David exactly has the type of problem of vision that engulfs a large number of young people who don't have enough experience in the real world or who haven't really analyzed the problems efficiently. And he wrote this entire article about the sessions, and on and on, all this boring stuff that nobody's interested in reading, you know, about the U.S. Air Force, right? Now, one of the things that, now, you have to understand that David Sklar is an independent consultant in the city of New York and co-author of O'Reilly's PHP cookbook. Okay. Well, that says something about them. You know, you can often tell something about an individual just by the programming languages they use and so on. And the PHP people are not bad people. They're not the Perl community or the C++ community or the C community or the Emacs community. They have their own community. So you have an idea of what kind of community it comes from, and I won't say anything more other than that. I think I'm on record enough about that. But after giving this whole boring thing, without even mentioning, to my knowledge, on here, the protest, and I remember looking at his face and handing him things and talking to him about it, and his whole article about this. I then went over and I posted on his weblog about the eGov OS sellout, to which I posted the preliminary version of our article to Responsible Leadership, Tony Stanko, eGov OS's problem, and it's very clear that this individual is just somebody who just doesn't understand in any way, shape, or form either what's happening around him in terms of digital rights management and the threat to free software, the very real threat to free software that is just sitting there on the desktop right now, weeks away from basically wiping out free software as a viable desktop application. And nor does he seem to live in the real world in terms of the economy. One of the reasons why there are so many people out of work right now, especially in the free software economy, is it's hard to find work. Have you been working lately?
Just barely.
Just barely? Doing anything interesting?
Not very.
HTML design work?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we have, Dobuar is basically doing printing now, with Quark and various other things. You're doing some HTML design work. I'm doing some very simple Perl web page stuff that's just monotonous and boring as hell, but at least it's free software, which I'm getting paid almost nothing to do. the Tim Wilcox has been struggling to find work. He's one of the biggest Beowulf clustering guys in the face of the earth. And on and on and on about the problems of finding employment. Peter Siegel has finally found work, but he's working with AIX Systems Administration, and so on. So the problem is, and we've said this before, you know, how are we going to create a market for free software, and when will we create a market for free software? The reason why people are getting jobs at Microsoft A++ is because Microsoft's on the damn desktop. If Microsoft's on the desktop, these A++ jobs just dry up and disappear. I want those jobs. I want those jobs, and I want them really badly, because I have a lot of people that I need to feed. And this guy, what bothers me most about an individual like David Sklar and Bruce Perens and Tony Stanko, especially Stanko, is they just don't care about you. I'm talking to you, the people that are out there who might be listening to this. They don't care about you. They don't care about you. They don't care. They don't care if you starve. They don't care if you shackle to DRM. They don't care if you go to NYU and you have to buy all your books on a DVD and it's turned off in 6 months. They just don't care. It gets to a point where these people are so callous and they're so, you know, beholden to themselves, and they think they're so wonderful. But when it comes down to many of people out there, and a lot of people in the free software movement, just don't have children. I mean, you look at the people that are, I mean, you know, there's 2.3 or 2.1 children per family in the United States. But if you went by our community, nobody has children. So you have a bunch of people that are really not beholden or responsible to anybody. David Sugar has children, right? But even people that I admire greatly, people like Richard Stallman, there's no children there. And Richard makes the same mistake everybody else does. He says to me, when I was talking to him about the problems with the eGovOS, he says, well, actually, most free software developers only work part-time doing their development, and they can get away without it. I said, no, Richard, no, because that means they're still doing something to eat, and they're probably working with proprietary software to do that. So it's, we need them to work full-time and earn the money with free software. And I'm talking about the grunts, you know. And in order to do that, it has to break through. It has no choice. It's got to break through to the desktop. It's never going to break through the desktop. You look at somebody like Liz Aram, who's a very bright, intelligent person. She had an interest in free software until she found that she couldn't play her DVDs on it, essentially.
She can play her DVDs on it.
You can play her DVDs on it. But she asked me if I could.
You refused to help her to play her DVDs on it.
I didn't know how to do it. I said to her, you can do it, but it makes you a felon, which is the fact. And she says, George, you know, makes a lot of money. I don't know if we should do that, you know. So, but that's where the interest dies. If people cannot get their music and their newspapers and their books and the things that they do with their computers on a day-to-day basis on those desktops are going to wither up and die. They will continue to be hobby horses or specialized applications for esoteric things like Ganeth and 3-piece suit describing the security benefits of open source software and transparency in the general. This boils down mostly to the notion, and I'm reading directly from David Sklar's website, that a secret which is difficult to change is vulnerability, blah, 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 blah. I mean, everything that he has listed here and everything that was at that eGovOS thing is a very specific, narrow-focused applications for the government. In no time was anybody talking about the type of broad blowing open the market for the government that is clearly necessary to make, you know, 40% or even 30% of the population working in free software on their computers, which is what's necessary. Now, hopefully, you know, eventually we can be 90%, but we're not going to be even 5%.
I think it's hard. Like, even in the sort of the growth curves for cell phones and things, I don't know if you look at this stuff, but if cell phones are at 5%, it means absolutely no one knows anyone who has a cell phone, so people don't get cell phones. But as soon as you get cell phones to 21% or 23%, everybody's friend has a cell phone, so everybody gets cell phones, and that goes from 23% to 80% in no time. But to go from 5% to 23% is an enormous battle. I mean, that's the huge hurdle. You know, once you've gotten into everyone's ear, then the growth is nothing.
Right. It doesn't
matter. So, I mean, we're going to...
If VR hits the machines and they get integrated onto the hardware level, which is what's happening with the Palladium setup...
Then the 5% is never going to be able to go anywhere.
It's never going to happen. And we can have the best desktops with the nicest GNOME stuff, with the KDE mixed in, and at killer applications, and it's just not going to be used. It's going to be that. It's that simple. Now, in response to my write-up, he writes... The chief gripe of NY Fair Use, those folks who, to give them credit, did have snazzy colonial-era looking costumes, seems to be that Microsoft employee gave a talk at the conference about shared source, which means that he just completely didn't read what I wrote, and he just doesn't care. This is a man who doesn't care. This is the type of advocate that we have to start tossing out of the movement. All right. I sat through the first 5 minutes of the talk. What talk? Maybe Microsoft, but left after it seemed like nothing new or interesting would be presented there. You must be talking about Microsoft because we didn't give a talk.
Who stayed?
Well, they said that 80 people stayed and talked to them. Despite antics, and here's the catch. Despite antics like this, lots of people in the government still embrace open source software. Aside from folks like NY Fair Use and vigorous debates about my language is better than yours, I suppose there aren't many religious zealots style absolutists in the technology world. Now, this is specific for David Square. I'm going to give you a message, David. David, you're an idiot. All right? Can you spell idiot? I find it hard to spell anything, but I think I can spell idiot. I-D-I-O-T. Actually, the way you spell idiot is D-A-V-I-D-S-K-L-A-R. David, you're an idiot. All right? Most people in the government don't give a rot's darn about open source or free software. I don't know which government offices you've walked into or so on. New York City's government is, including their eGov applications, are running completely on Microsoft NT. The desktops are running on completely NT. We went to the police department and tried to get them, and they are missing computers altogether. For the reports, they're only interested in Windows, all right? So you don't know what you're talking about whatsoever, all right? You just don't care about free software developers. You only care about yourself, all right? That's number one. Number two, David Sklar, and those who like you, Tony Stanko and others like you. Let me give you a little hint about something that you still don't seem to understand. All right? We're not zealots. All right? Now, people that sell Microsoft that go over and make blatant lies like the GPL is going to corrupt your soul and it's bad for the economy and so on and so forth and get out there and lie, those are zealots. All right? But somehow it's all right. If you work for Microsoft, it's okay. Or if you work for that matter, Siba Geigy, it's okay. Or Merck Sharp & Dohme, it's okay. Or if you work for About.com, it's okay. Because then it's called being a salesperson, right? And you can be as zealot as you want, right? But when you're doing it because you want free software, you're a zealot. Wrong, David. You're wrong. Mr. Sklar, you're an idiot. You and Tony Stanko should both go to free software purgatory, okay? We're not zealots. What we're saying is, and what you seem to fail to understand, is that the people who talk and speak about free software and talk about open source software, whatever that dubious term means, which seems to change by the moment, all right, as it's convenient for the people promoting it, all right, don't seem to understand is this, all right, is that the digital applications that we use to communicate today increasingly, and we're talking about maybe 80 or 90% of the communications of the coming generation, of the kids that are growing up, and us, and you, and me, and everybody that's below the age of 40, which I still am for a few more days, all right? We do 90% of our communication through these systems, and these systems, all right, absolutely have to be free from impedance and be treated like our private property, all right? It's really that simple. When you go out and you buy a disc, it's reasonable and straight and center, political centrist, to think that when I go out and I buy a CD or a disc or a newspaper on a disc or a book on a disc or anything else in any other format, that I can put it into my machine, copy it to my hard drive, and share it with my grandmother just like I would with paperback. Now, this is a reasonable thing. I'll tell you what's not reasonable, what's zealot and religious. All right? What zealot and religious is, inviting Microsoft, who's going over proposing that the GPL, all right, is some type of evil thing that's going to thwart the economy, all right? Or goes over and has a radical plan to basically spy on every single computer that's in the continental United States through the desktop.
Which
they're already trying to do. Or a company like...
But basically, you don't know if they're not already doing it.
Right. A company like QuickBooks that goes over and tells you as part of their EULA that nobody reads, right, that they're going to take your private information if you're an accountant and share it with their own database, all right, which is a violation of the accounting practice, right, that... This is a radicalism and a zealotism that we, as centralist Americans, all right, and citizens of the world for that matter, but mostly as I'd like to think that America is a beacon to the world, as Americans, and especially as New Yorkers, which is a beacon to America, all right, cannot stand for. This will not stand, and when we're going to fight this every step of the way. And every time that somebody comes around and they say, well, we have to go over and we have to pull the chair open for Microsoft because, after all, they have the monopoly on the desktop, which is what their argument is and what they're saying. This is not acceptable. David Sugar has got four kids that he has to feed. And he lost money because somebody pulled out a chair for a corporation which is not only opposed to free software, but vigorously spends hundreds of millions of dollars to try to knock it off the market and is doing everything that it can technically that it can do without getting itself dragged into court a third time, all right, to kill it, all right? We do not want to go on the scrap pile heap of history like Netscape did, all right? We want to continue to stay relevant, and the only way we're going to stay relevant is not with an economic argument, and not with a marketing argument, and not with a technical argument, but it's got to be a political argument, and the political argument is this: David Sklar, get this message and get this clear. New Yorkers for Fair Use, which is a subcommittee of New York of NYLXS, wants to give you a clear message. Digital rights management is theft, and we are the stakeholders. If you can't hold to that line and you can't at least make a company like Microsoft come to the table with something, come with something. I mean, IBM has done things like this also to us, but IBM has actually contributed something. Sun, which is, I would say, very often an evil company, has contributed something to us, right? But Microsoft has contributed nothing to the free software movement. Anything that advocates free software in front of a commercial interest as large as the world governments, the United Nations, the UN, which is the United Nations, the U.S. government, city and state and local governments all across the world, let me tell you something. There is no place there for Microsoft, all right? They have a $1 billion budget, let them blow it on the television advertising. And if you think that I'm trying to squash them from their free speech, whatever the heck that's supposed to be, the, you know, when there is no such thing when you're talking about a commercial venue like this, all right? Let me give you another thing, all right? We will give them a chance to come speak and say their shared secret, shared source, all they want, as long as they give us 30-second commercials for every 30-second commercial they put on the air. When they give us equal time, we'll take equal time also. You know, when the Republicans talk, the Democrats have to be allowed time. There's no such thing in the commercial venues. If Microsoft's got more money and they can advertise and push their wares down your throat, and they can send out to every single IT manager, a smear campaign on the GPL like they did.
They send you free discs, too.
Yeah, and plus free discs, yes. You know, they're worse than AOL already, right? Then it is time for us to wake up and say we're in a market and we're competing. But we're not only just competing on a business angle here or on a business end, but we're also competing on a political end, all right? And we cannot allow people to steal from the community and not give, especially when it's a $100 billion conglomerate the size of Microsoft, which is openly hostile. Yeah, they're conglomerate. They have
an englobulator, I think.
No, we're not going to. Never going to use that word. Jay wanted to have that word. He can keep it. All right. And go over and which has spent millions and millions of dollars on trying to undo the marketing that we so painstakingly do at NYLXS. At NYLXS, we had to struggle for months just to get enough money for 500 folders in black and white that we can hand out to people. You know, we can't walk. You're going to go to PC Expo, which is coming up now. They call it Tech Expo in a couple of weeks, and it's going to be like walking into Disney World from Microsoft. It's going to have multiple videos across the room. And have you ever seen the Javits Center? It's the size of a 4-story building, 4 blocks long. It's like the size of 2 football fields, and there's going to be videos across it, running ActiveX. And we're not using pushing ActiveX now. That's such a security problem. It's going to be pushing Palladium now. Trusted software. All right. I mean, for God's sakes, they just threw $10 million at the school system just to teach the students how to code securely. Let me tell Microsoft a way of coding securely. First rule: don't do it on Windows. What? Yes, that's what I said. Don't do it on Windows. All right. Now, also, we got to do something about the EULA. The Microsoft EULA has to become. I think we need to start in our marketing campaign for the FSCC. I think what we should do is take the Microsoft EULA and print it however that is done, you know, you can't print their EULA because it comes up in that stupid thing. You know, the only thing you can try to do, I don't know, I guess...
I think you can print it. I think you can say...
Can you print
on
it?
The, I don't think you can say, it. Do you want to...
I think the only way that you can really do it is if you're running, you know, like virtual computing, right? You're running Windows on top of Linux, then you can screen capture it. You know, it's the only way of no one doing it. But we got to get that EULA, and we need to start using that in our marketing campaign. Is this the EULA that you want to sign, or do you want to sign the GPL? Here's the GPL, and here's the EULA. And nobody in their right mind is going to want the Microsoft contract. It is abhorrent, all right? David Sklar, you just don't understand it. And Tony Stanko, we want to put you on the scrap heap of free software history before Microsoft puts us on the free scrap heap of history. Now, that being said, I would like to, that's a nice injunction into the discussion with, we have a number of members, by the way, that are involved with a number of things. One of the things that we have a member, we have Adam Cosman, who's a very important member of NYLXS, and he's been involved with the Toshiba case with the Windows Refund Day. Now, personally, I think the Windows Refund thing Day is not my cup of tea, and it's not something I would prefer to pursue. But Adam has, there are, not that there's not issues with it, there's definitely issues with the Windows Refund thing. Adam has been working on this, though, and we support Adam's efforts in this. And he is wrote an article, which I hope to be published in the next week, that where he went over, he brought us the Toshiba laptop, he tried, Microsoft is under court order to give back the operating, or give a refund on the operating system through the vendor. All right, this is what they're under court order to do. So he goes over and he buys the Toshiba laptop, he goes over and he wants his refund for his Windows operating system according to the court order, right, which is also in the EULA. So what does Toshiba come over? He goes to the small claims court, right, in Queens or Brooklyn, wherever it was. And he goes over, and they actually send a lawyer, Toshiba, and this is what the lawyer says to him. The lawyer says to him, we're not budging one inch on this. He is obviously just trying to promote his website. He's talking about Adam's Windows Refund Day website. Guess what, Mr. Lawyer? You just screwed with the wrong organization, all right? NY Fair Use is going to be on this, and NYX is going to be on this. Now, personally, this is not something that I normally have wanted to focus on. However, in this particular case, this is a member, and we support our members. And we're going to be, we're going to be on Toshiba in a way that Toshiba has not anticipated previously. And we're going to be helping Adam in this court battle all the way up the tree on this, all right? Now, Adam wrote a nice piece. I'm not going to read the entire piece over the radio. It makes no point in that sense, although I should probably have him here next week for his window refund things. But I will make the point that Toshiba is going to bring into the court what they call their master end-use license agreement, which is what they have with Microsoft, right? That is the agreement that they have with Microsoft, and they're going to say that, according to Microsoft, they're selling it as a component, blah, 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 and that just like you can't change your hard drive, you can't change this. This is nonsense. The bottom line is that the courts have ordered Microsoft to cut the deals correctly with the companies like Toshiba, and Toshiba has to follow the law. Not only that, but the agreement clearly says in the EULA that if you don't want it, wrap it up and send it back, and that's exactly the way it is. Now, personally, I think the EULA and everything I've seen about the EULA, there's a very interesting thing. When there was the Linux show, they had, or not at the Linux show, at the Nylog meeting, they had the guys from Real Networks there doing their Helix thing. One of the things that they said is that they didn't think that the EULA just packaging the license was good enough to make it enforceable. So they, I don't know why they think this, there's no court cases yet that say that any EULAs are contractable yet. But they're saying that they want, so you have to go through a click-through agreement, very similar to like with OpenOffice, you got to go through a click-through agreement. Now, I don't think even the click-through agreement is an agreement. It's a long discussion that we can have over a beer one day. But the bottom line is that one of the problems I have with the Windows Refund Project is that it emphasizes the agreement of the EULA. And I don't think the EULA is anything that we can agree to in the first place. I don't think it's enforceable in the first place. However, letting that go for a moment, the fact that Microsoft's under court order to do something with their contractors, that's a whole other ball of wax, any event, which goes beyond the EULA. But in the EULA, it says itself, and by the way, if you don't know what a EULA is, for those who are listening, a EULA is the little licensing agreement that you have with the software vendor. In that EULA, it says, if you don't want it, return it and get your money back from the vendor. That's what it is. All right? End of subject. All right? There's an agreement between the courts and the end user and the vendors, and somebody's got to give Adam back his money. Period. All right? And the outrageous manipulation of the facts by this lawyer who thinks, well, he's got Adam Cosman, who's about 24 years old there, right, doing this. He thinks he's got him by the lions. Guess what? You don't got him by the lions, because he's backed up by an organization of very mature adults who are very articulate, and we know how to argue these things in court. And we're going to bury Toshiba on this. And so keep up. You'll be able to keep up on this, and like I said, I'll get this done, this article up online in the political section of NYLXS with Marco's approval next week. Now, in addition to that, Adam was also one of the guys that came down with us to eGovOS. Now, you know, the funny thing with the press about eGovOS, I don't know what they, you know, when we went down to Washington, D.C. for the Department of Commerce, they hackled us because we turned the meeting upside down, right? That's all right. So we went down to eGovOS. We didn't want to turn that meeting upside down because there's a lot of newbies there, and it just didn't make any sense to go over in that environment to, you know, blow them up. That wasn't our intention. It wasn't our intention to blow up the DOC either. We just wanted to have a seat at the table. Nevertheless,
you didn't blow up the DOC.
We didn't blow up the DOC either. It's true. They got done with everything, and I shouldn't even believe that even anybody. But people who thought that we blew it up, we didn't even want to disrupt them in any way at all. We just wanted to have a seat at the table. In any event, which is something I have to start pulling out of the radio show. I'm going to start editing out all the in any events.
The coughs,
yes. Adam participated there. Now, Adam was one of the best people there. He talked to people. Every time I looked over my shoulder, he was in intense conversations with people about the topic, and he was very good at explaining our point of view. By the way, when we rationally explained our point of view at the eGovOS, we had uniform agreeability by everybody but Tony Stanko. All right, he is completely out on a limb by himself over here. When people actually hear what we have to say and what we're trying to explain to them, then it's understandable. Now, understand, we did most of our venting and discussion about this on the mailing list prior to going down there, so there wasn't much point for us to get into a protest over it. I mean, most of the people that we wanted to vent at, we already vented at. So we went down there and we handed out the pamphlets, which I will link that up, and we talked to people. There were only about 400 or 500 people there. We talked to everybody, except for David Sklar, who doesn't know how to listen, but everybody else we pretty much spoke to. Right? Now, Adam says out of the dozens of conversations that he had, his write-up says that while most people were confused by Microsoft's presence, like, yeah, I mean, obviously everybody's going, why is Microsoft here anyway? They seemed to be under the impression that Microsoft had been invited to participate in a debate. Now, obviously, there are many people that would like to listen in on an event like that. This was not the time or the place, and this is what he says. What started a free software OSS advocacy event, what started as a free software advocacy event, had been turned into a flea market where even those vendors that had proven themselves to be intent on destroying the free software revolution were free to spread their disinformation in an attempt to win additional market share. This was basically his spiel, which was pretty much on the party line. And this was very important that everybody was there and they were very much on the party line. By the way, I think that we covered the entire world in terms of in terms of culture in our representation. We had people from India, we had Indians, we had people from South America, we had American Indians, we had Jew here or there, and we had people from Ireland. So we covered, I mean, if you look at the picture, this is only New York can get a gathering like this together. We left our Frenchman at home, but that was his wife's fault anyway. But we're not done with this, and we're going to be continuing on this, and we're going to be watching over the next time. And we're going to push. We're going to either make Microsoft come to the table and contribute something to the community, or butt out. This is the way it's got to be. It's got to be one or the other. They think somehow it's a marketing event for us to get into a debate with them at these things. They don't seem to understand. Microsoft's got more money than we have, and any press that they get, they're going to be able to spin their way. They have in their pockets all of the IT press. You know, PC Week and all these things. I mean, they depend on Microsoft for the bread and butter and their paychecks. They're going to print basically almost anything that Microsoft wants printed. And we're in an uphill battle there, and we better start treating it like it is. Nobody would have thought of doing this a few years ago. You know, it's only currently. Certainly everybody is thinking about the stupidity of this. I mean, so free software has gotten to where it's gotten to without their help. And you know what? We're going to be able to get to the next stage without their help completely. We don't need their help. We don't need to debate them. We don't need to discuss it. That being the case, though, with Marco's permission at the next board meeting, I'm going to suggest that we do invite Mr. Gates or Mr. Pro, or whatever his name is from them, or Matzo, I think his name is, to come to New York to debate Richard Stallman and myself, and let's see, maybe we can get to, you know, NYU or somebody or Columbia to do this right at a venue, and we'll do this as a benefit. And they want to have a debate, they can debate. Fine, this will be a debate. They can sit there on one side of the table. We'll get a moderator in the middle. I don't know who we can get to moderate this off the top of my head. Maybe we'll get President Bush or Bloomberg, who knows. And we'll get me and Richard on the other side, then get somebody else in there if they want it from the BSA or wherever else they want to, and we can debate it. And we'll have a lot of fun. Nobody will pay attention, but it'll raise some money. It'll get suppressed for a few weeks, and then it'll just fall on scrap heap of history, which seems to be my expression of the day. But this will satisfy them, because we're not about crushing their free speech. We're about advocating and not undermining our membership. I care about my members. David Sklar, Tony Stanko, they don't care about you, not in the least little bit. It can't continue. We have to protect ourselves. Nobody's going to protect you but you. That being said, I think I've said everything I wanted to say for this week's radio broadcast. What the heck? It's always a three-hour show. Okay, we need to get some commercials in there at some point. Actually, this should be another thing that we should try to raise money on, try to sponsor the radio show. That being said, I'd like to say to everybody that until next Sunday, have a great weekend. Have a wonderful, the weekend's over. Have a wonderful week. Enjoy the fine weather. And it is supposed to get better. By the way, opening day for the baseball season starts tomorrow, as a matter of fact. So it's going to be good to see opening day with at Shea Stadium with snow on the ground. That'll be one for the annals of the Mutsies, okay? And have a great time for everybody, and I will see you when I look at you. Bye-bye. Dun-da-da-dun, 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 dun-